started. Welcome back. One thing I need to apologize for is writing one of the T's office number wrong on the website. Sorry about that. It was Chris. He tried to go to Chris's office hours and there was nobody there. That's my fault. So you can, whatever. I apologize. So I corrected on the website. Another thing, the sample midterm is out. You can take a look at it, and I will answer questions on Monday. So try to figure out if you, in the email I said, choose three problems that you think are, most difficult for you, and I'll answer the most difficult problems. But I'll try to go over every question that everybody has. So we'll spend some time on Monday going over the midterm. If you have time this weekend to take a look at it, or this week, that would be good. It's all problems in the homework. So if you understood the problems in the homework, you should be able to do the midterm. And the actual midterm will be pretty similar to the sample midterm. Any questions? Any questions about homework 2? I know it was due today, but I don't know. Kind of late to ask, I guess. So one thing I want to do is go over the machine language problems again, because one of the problems in the sample midterm and one of the problems on the midterm is going to be something like flipper questions on machine language. And you guys didn't get a chance to practice them for the homework, so there's no problem like this in the homework. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands. I got some comments that this is a little hard, and so I'm just going to go over it again, and then we'll have more clicker questions about it. And stop me at any point if if anything is not clear. I definitely want you guys to get it. Okay, so again, we saw these. These are the operations, the legal operations that we can do in the machine language, which is a very simple programming language. And so we have, you've probably seen, we have a whole bunch of variables. We have variables A through P, which, we write as V. V can be anything between A, B, C through P. Accumulator is just another variable, but it's a very important one because it's involved in every single one of these, as you can see. But it's just another box, and it's called accumulator instead of A or B or C. And the reason why it's important is that, for us, human beings, it would be very hard to do things if we didn't have hands. And so the accumulator is kind of like the hand of the processor, right? So, if it needs something, if it needs to do an operation, it will grab that the variable in the hand, and then it will use it to, do whatever operation it needs to do. So that's why the accumulator is a special variable. And so, again, another thing that I think a lot of people found unclear is something like accumulator equals A. We have a lot of these in the machine language. What does that mean? What happens when we have something like accumulator equals A? Okay. And what happens is that whatever's on the right-hand side of the equal gets dumped in whatever's on the left side, hand side of the equal. So that is what we mean by accumulator equals A. It's like it's a convention. It's like saying 1 plus 1 equals 2. Well, that's kind of true. But, we use equal in different ways, and the way we use it in this class, in this specific context, is that, we have a left-hand side, a right-hand side, and this is the process that happens physically when we write accumulator equals A. Whatever is in A gets dumped in the accumulator. So if, for example, in this case, V was A, if we say A equals not accumulator, what happens is that whatever's in the accumulator gets knotted and dumped in A. That's what's going to happen. And so that's if this location is the accumulator, this blue box, then after running this instruction, we will have A in the accumulator. And so what happens if we have something like accumulator equals A and then accumulator equals B? What's going to happen in that case? Well, after the first instruction is run, It puts A in the accumulator, as we've seen before. So, you know, right-hand side gets dumped in left-hand side. So A gets dumped in the accumulator. And the next instruction says accumulator equals B. So B gets put in the accumulator. B gets stored in the accumulator. And so it basically overwrites whatever was in the accumulator before. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. What happens if after we add C equals accumulator? What's going to happen after that? What was that?
In C, it's gonna be B.
In C, we're going to put B. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Because that's how we define equal. Okay. And so this is an example of a program, and we're going to go step by step, and we're going to see exactly what happens to the accumulator and to C. And so so we have a whole bunch of variables in this program. We have accumulator, we have A, B, and C. Why did I only use accumulator in C? Why did I only put accumulator in C? Well, the reason is that they are the only variables that are going to change. Like, only the left-hand side of the equals is going to change. And so I only need to, A and B are not going to change. And so I only need to look at what's going to happen with the accumulator and with C. Because at the end of the program, whatever was in A is going to be in A. Whatever was in B is going to be in B. And so, let's see. So the first thing that happens, this instruction gets executed, and we put not A in the accumulator. What is the next thing that's going to happen? The second instruction says store in the accumulator whatever's in the accumulator now, or with B. And so this doesn't, it's not really, it needs to figure out what that is first. Like, it needs to figure out, what am I going to store in the accumulator? And so it needs to figure out what this is. And what is that? Yes. So this is not A or B, because whatever's in the accumulator is not A. All right. And so that gets dumped in the accumulator, and we're going to have not A or B in the accumulator. Same thing. We go over the next instruction. This is going to be not A or B, because that was the accumulator. I put parens around it because it gets evaluated when A and B are true or false or whatever. And that gets ANDed with A. And that is going to get stored in the accumulator again. And then we say C equals accumulator, so whatever is in the accumulator gets dumped in C. Okay? Does this make sense? I think one of the clicker questions from... Okay, so, one question can be, what will C be after this machine language program is executed? And your answer should be C is not A or B, in parens, and then A. I think this was one of the clicker questions from last time. Same thing. So this is a different way to write it. It's the same thing. But this is how you write it on paper, because it's kind of hard to make a box on paper and then erase it and then write something on top of it. So the way I do it on paper is I just draw this table, and I put, again, on top, like the front row of the table will be all the variables that are on the left-hand side of all my instructions, okay? So those are the only ones that are going to get changed. So I have accumulator and A on the left-hand side, B and C don't change. And so I start and I just fill out this table. And I say, okay, accumulator equals B, and then it becomes B and C, right? And so, I erase, you can cross it off. It's not B anymore, it's going to be B and C. But you always have to remember the last value in the table. And so after that, A becomes B and C. Then the new value of the accumulator is whatever was the old value or B. So the old value or B. And I cross this off or erase it or whatever. You can cross it off, it doesn't matter. Then I have accumulator is accumulator and A. So accumulator, old value, and A. Copy A, and then whatever is in the accumulator, I put in A. Okay? And then, again, the question is, what will A be? I can ask, what can the accumulator be after all these instructions are executed. And that's if the question is what AB, your answer should be that. Is this clear? Any questions? A gets rewritten whenever I say A equals something. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, that might have been just what she said, but I didn't hear it. It gets overwritten.
Yes, it gets overwritten.
Again. So then the new A would be B and C, or B and B and C. That's the new message, and the old message is
erased. Is erased. Yep. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. All right, we're going to have some quicker questions, I think, now. So that's your program. You have accumulator equals A, N equals not accumulator, accumulator equals B, and accumulator equals accumulator or N. And the question is, what will accumulator be after this machine language program is executed? So after all these instructions at the end, what will the accumulator be? And your options are A, accumulator equals not A, B, accumulator equals B, C, accumulator is not A or B, E, I don't know why I put A, E, accumulator is not B or A, and E, accumulator is A and B. So this is the other equal that we're using in day-to-day life. Yeah, question?
Yeah.
Do you want to write down on a piece of paper, any other questions? I'm going to stop at 2:30. Your new program is accumulator equals not A, E equals accumulator, accumulator equals B, accumulator equals accumulator or C, E equals accumulator and E. And the question is, what will E be after this machine language program is executed? And the answers are A, the program can't be executed because it contains illegal instructions, B, E equals B or C and not A, C, E equals not A and paren B or C, close paren. D equals not paren A and B or C, close paren. E equals false. Just remember, the order of operations is very important. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, stop at 2:30. I guess 14 people, I think.
Is E allowed to equal E and another?
Yeah, you have variable equals variable or variable equals variable and... Oh, I see. You mean this one?
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, so it was E and accumulator?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess you can get points for that. Okay. It's not an illegal instruction because, well, it is literally, but you can, I mean, I could have written it as E and accumulator.
You have it written that way on your slide.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's so there's two right answers. There's A and C. And the reason why B is wrong is that if you write it like this, C and not A is executed first, and when you have an expression like this, you're going to do the and before the or, and so you need the parentheses around B or C because you do B or C, and then you do the and not A. Okay, so right answer is A and C. For A was that this is E equals E and accumulator. No, it's probably, I mean, I probably will spend more time on the midterm problems than on these, so like 5 minutes. I mean, if something like this happens on a midterm, just write down, I think this is, you know, like just write everything that you know and we'll work with that. Okay, so I think I'm going to actually skip this for now. And try to go back to it if we have time. And I'm going to go back to expression trees and where we left off last time. And just a quick recap again. We define the expression trees as, so an expression tree can be either true or false, or a not of an expression tree, or an and of two expression trees, or an or of two expression trees. And that was our circular definition. And so a few examples we gave were, if my expression is, so the idea is that any Boolean expression has an expression tree associated with it. And the expression trees are a pretty way of showing the expressions, a more visual way for us to help us kind of see them and see the order of, you know, operations and stuff like that. And so if our expression is true, we can draw that as just the leaf that's true. If it's false, we can just draw it as a leaf that is false. True and false, this expression, we draw that as a tree that has a root and as a root, and it has two leaves, one is true and one is false. The not is a tree that has the root a not and the leaf is true. Then we had more complicated ones. We had a true and true, which we draw like this. Not true or false. Then we had a big one. And so we said that how do we compute the expression if we have the tree? Well, we can go bottom up, and we said that, you know, we can start here, and we can make a tree out of this subtree, and it's going to be, it was a true and true, and we can call that true. And then we go here, and because we go bottom up, we're going to compute this tree first, and that's going to be a not true, which is false. And then we have false or false, which is going to be false, and then we have true and false, which is going to be false. Okay? Any questions? All right, let's see if we can do further questions. So that's, you have this tree, the root of the tree is an OR, and on the left-hand side you have a knot and a leaf of B, and on the right-hand side you have a leaf that is A. And the question is, which of the following expressions evaluates the tree? And your options are A, it's not A, B, it's B, C, not A or B, D, not B or A, E, A and B. Okay, yeah. Does not B equal A? No. They're independent. Okay, so I'll stop at 1. Is which of the following machine language programs does not evaluate the tree? And I'm probably not going to read all these. So you have A, B, C, D, and E. The option of all of them actually evaluate the tree. Think of expressions that are equivalent to the expression of the tree. It doesn't have to be literally. It can be something that's equivalent. You can add C equals accumulator here. You should add C equals accumulator. No. That helps, right? So the result is stored in C, basically. So the result of this tree is stored in C. And so all these things have C equals something at the end, and this doesn't. So add C equals accumulator here. Let's try an experiment. You guys can talk to each other and work together if you want. If you want. If you don't, that's okay. I mean, legally, because, like, you know, there's some, I mean, I know people talk to each other during legal questions, but it's okay. I mean, it's not okay officially, but, well, there's a study that shows that if you let people work together, they learn better. And so that's why the exception will be the midterm. You can't talk to each other. And a final. Okay, so if you choose not to, that's okay. All right, let's see. Maybe 3:30? No?
Can legally talk to each other. Please add C. Yeah, okay. So here. So... do you guys need more time, or should I stop? Nobody says anything, I'm going to assume that I can stop. No? I'm just going to stop. So. Alright, so. I guess the battle is between A and C, I'm going to say. And so, A is. This is a tricky question. It was meant to be tricky. Let's see. What does A do? Who answered? Okay, go ahead. So what is C again? I'm sorry. Can you say that again? Give me the expression for C.
C equals not A and B.
Yes, exactly. Okay, which is, yeah, I didn't get your last, the last part you said.
Yeah,
so I said,
A, or not B.
Okay, so what he's saying is that if you draw the tree, or if you draw the expression, or if you compute the expression that you get for C, in the first program, so in option A, you get A, C equals not paren, not A and B, close paren. And that is according to
Alex.
Okay, according to Alex, so or the De Morgan's law, also called, it's A or not B, right? So if you have not of something and something, it's not the first part and not the second part. Or not. Remember when the not gets distributed and the or flips with an and? Okay, so apparently he's called Alex De Morgan. I didn't know that. Okay, so A is good. A actually evaluates the tree. And
C
is the right answer. Because C is obviously wrong. Because, okay, something happens. It looks kind of good. And then accumulator equals not A. And then C equals accumulator. So the accumulator, C will be not A.
I read it wrong.
Okay, so C is the right answer or the wrong program that computes. So the only program that doesn't compute the tree or evaluate the tree right. Okay. So this is supposed to be tricky. If you got A, I understand. I mean, I understand in either case, but okay. So here's what where we are right now. The problem is that we like trees and they look pretty and we understand them, but the computers don't. Computer understand this kind of thing, which we don't like. And so we want to go from a tree to a program like this because we want our computer to understand what we want it to do. And so the reason why this program computes this tree is that when we look at this tree, we see that, well, the first thing we have to do is not A. And so we're going to do that and put it in the accumulator. So this whole tree will be in the accumulator. And then we have to do accumulator or B, and that is our second instruction. and that gets dumped in the accumulator again. So we also talked about interpreters and compilers, and there's interpreters are are programs that take code and some kind of example where they run the code that they need to run the code on. So this was the code for evaluating the tree. You know, given a tree, what is the value of the tree? So in this case, it is true or false, so it's going to be true. And so this interpreter gets the code and the you know, the thing that it needs to run the code on, and it will return, it would actually run the code and return the value. So we said that it takes a program and makes it happen. The compiler takes a code, so, you know, code in Java or something, and returns machine language. So it's like a translator. It's a, you know, program that turns a program into a program, three different programs. Yeah.
Is that like the previous slide? Is that what it actually looks like in, like, Fortran or whatever they converted to?
This one?
The right side.
I just wrote an expression because this was the code for that expression. I don't want it to kind of make sense. You can definitely write that, sure. But it's, yeah. It would be a little more complicated, but you could write something like that. But this definitely can't run on the processor, so you definitely need to break it down like this. And so it's like translating between languages, right? So, you know, say you have an employer, and the employer has an employee, and they both speak French, right? The interpreter is like the employee that speaks French. So, you know, the employer can just tell the employee, I want you to do this, and the employee is going to do it. The compiler is like a translator. So, you know, it's like an employer that speaks French and an employee that speaks English, for example. And, you know, no matter how much the employer yells at the employee, it's not going to make it do. It's not going to, you know, the employee's not going to understand it, and so he needs a translator, and that's what the compiler is like. And so, again, we like trees, but we need them to see the expressions, but computers want this kind of thing. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take examples of expressions like this. We're going to draw the tree, and we're going to see what the code will look like. We're going to take just a few examples at a very high level, pretty much. And so we're going to have two options of codes. One code will leave the final value in the accumulator, and the other option will leave the result in memory or in another variable. And so, for example, if our expression is A, we just want A in the accumulator, or we just want A in another variable P. It's a very simple simple problem, right? We have A, which can be true or false. We have this leaf in the tree, so we don't have any root or anything. And the code is just, if we want the answer in the accumulator, our code is accumulator equals A, and that's it. And so, you know, the machine language just says put in the accumulator whatever's in A. If we want the result in P, it's a little more complicated. The expression is P equals A. The tree is the same, but we have to, we have to put A in the accumulator, and then we have to put whatever is in the accumulator, we have to put it in P. And so what P will have will be the value in the accumulator, which is A. Okay, what if we have our expression is not of some kind of expression for which we have the code, for which we have the expression tree already? How do we compute the not of that expression? So if we want the expression in the accumulator, this is the tree. This can be anything. So we don't need to come up with this. This is given to us. And so is expression, and so is the code for expression. So we have some code before this where expression, whatever the expression is in n, in variable n. And then we want to have the not of the, we have going to have the not of the expression, and accumulator is not n here. So that's what the code is. And so if we want the expression in P, then same thing, we have the expression tree, we have the expression in the accumulator, for example, already computed, and we can say P equals not accumulator, because we already have the result of the expression in the accumulator. So this is just giving a very high-level description of how we can do these things. or how the compiler actually does is these things. What if we have two expressions? We have expression one, we have expression two. Already, we have the trees, we have the codes, we don't, you know, they're given to us. We just have to compute the OR between them. And so this is our tree. And so say we store one of the results of expression one in N, these are results of expression two in the accumulator, and then we just have to do this. That's all we have to do if we want to store the result in the accumulator. If we want to store the result in P, we just have to play around with the variables and, for example, store expression one in P, expressions in the accumulator, and then just run this expression, and that will put in P whatever is in the accumulator, so expression one, or with whatever's in P, which is accumulator, which is expression two, or expression one. So now, taking a very concrete expression, not A or B. So what our task is, again, to compute the value of the expression. And so if we want the answer in the accumulator, how do we do it? Well, we need the code, we need not A, and we need it in N. That's going to be our first step. And our second step is going to be somehow bring B in the accumulator. And the reason why we need the answer in N here is that when we do this, when we put in B the answer, when we put B in the accumulator, that's going to overwrite not A. And so we want to store not A somewhere else, which we choose to be N. And so what is the code for that? So that breaks into two more steps. We need the A in the accumulator. So accumulator equals A. And then we need a code for not A in N. So we say N equals not accumulator. And so the second part is just accumulator equals B. And so that is the whole code for if we want to generate not A or B and store the answer in the accumulator. So how many instructions is that? How many machine language instructions? Four. One, two, three, four. And this is what's the, you know, italics are what we're going to do. You know, like what's in our head and our kind of our comments, and this is the actual code. So same thing, if we wanted to do, if we want the answer in P, we're going to store our not A in P, and that's going to be accumulator equals A, and then P equals not accumulator. And then we put B in the accumulator. And then if we do P equals accumulator or P, we're going to have not A or B in P. And so the assembler is the part of this process that breaks the program down into the simplest instruction possible. So here I just copied all these instructions and all these instructions here. And these are the codes that you can get by, so remember the 7-bit code that each instruction has? You can convert that to decimal, and these are the codes of the instructions. And if you're a programmer or a hacker, and you would look into the assembler language, you would see numbers like this. And then you would know exactly what those numbers are because you convert to binary, and then you look on the map and see exactly what your instructions are. And so how would we do this? How would you do not by hand? How would you do not A or B? Can you do it in less than four instructions? You can write it down if you want. Can you see the tree again? Sure. Yes. This is the tree. Any ideas? Yeah.
Can you do accumulator equals not A?
Uh-huh.
And then on the next line, can you write accumulator equals accumulator or B?
Yes. So two instructions. Okay, that's the best we can do, and it's better than four. I mean, this is kind of ridiculous. We are comparing two and four, but when you have a huge program, that makes a difference. And so by hand, we come up with these. And this is what the machine, you know, our process, like doing it mechanically leads us to four, and doing it this way leads us to two. And so, you know, there's always more than one way to do it, but there's, you want it, you know, people do a lot of research in how to make compilers fast, how to make, you know, translate a code into a few structures fast.
So you don't have to define what A is before you say not A?
You know what A is. Because you want to compute not A or B, so you're assuming that you know exactly what A and B are. And you just want to compute that. Okay. And so, so I'm going to show you kind of what, how do people think about, this is called optimization. And this is just, there's a lot of ways of speeding up the process. Four versus two does not look very impressive, but if you speed it up by, if you make it twice as fast, that's great. You know, it's the difference between, so sometimes my experiments need a few hours to run. You know, it's the difference between 4 hours and 2 hours, and I get my results faster. So that's good. And so there's two ways, shared sub-expression and logical equivalence, and they sound very fancy, but I'm going to show you real quick what they are. So our code for, say, our expression is this, A equals A and B and C, or A and B and D, okay? So the really mechanical way to do this is to compute this first, the first part, A and B and C, which it breaks down into A and B, which is this code, which we've seen before. Then put C in the accumulator and do E equals accumulator in E. So we had A and B in E, so E becomes C and A and B, so this part. And the second part is put in the accumulator whatever A and B and D is. And so, you know, we can store A and B in N. We need another variable, right? Because we're going to need the accumulator later. And so this is the code for N equals A and B. Then we put D in the accumulator, and we just do this. And then we have in the accumulator, we're going to have A and B and D. And then we just do E equals accumulator or E, because we had the first part in E and the second part in the accumulator. And so we combine the results. And so we had 13 instructions, and we needed, this is one temporary variable, so we need an extra help. And, you know, good programming needs or good optimization needs as few temporary variables as possible, but we cannot use the variables that we are using. It's, if we use A here, we mess up the whole process. So we need to use something that we're not using. And so one way of making this better is called shared sub-expressions, and you can notice that we have A and B, and we don't need to compute that twice. We can compute it once, store it somewhere in one variable, and use it later. And so we pick N for that, and we put A and B in N, and we compute, we use all the instructions that we need for that. And then E is just N and C, so N was A and B, so E is N and C, or N and D. And we do that too. So we start with the first part, N and C. Those are the instructions for that. N and D, those are the instructions for that. And then we just combine the results to get our final. And it turns out that this is actually worse for this example, because we have the same number of instructions, but we have two. We need two helpers. We need O, and we need N. But normally, in normal life, again, when you have a big program and you have lots of instructions and expressions, this works out pretty well. And the best way is called logical equivalence, and it's based on simplifying expressions. And the reason why when you had the truth table to formula, one of the steps was simplify, is that saves a lot of resources. I think it's a little beyond the scope of this class to actually learn how to simplify expressions, but I'm just going to show you real quick what that does. So here, this expression is, we can factor out A and B, and actually it's equivalent to this one. And so if we do that, we're going to do A and B first, and this is a code for that, and then we're going to do C or D first. And that's the code for that, and then combine the results. And we only use E and 9 instructions, which is, you know, pretty good improvement for for it. Anyway, this is stuff that, you know, people that research in compilers do, this kind of thing. So, or people who design compilers. And so, again, this is another kind of slide about compilers, which you can see here that there's an optimizer. So this is the tech, you know, the program comes in, the compiler optimizes it, and then it generates the code, and then the code runs on the chip. And so, let's skip this. So again, we saw this picture before, the link between bits and logic and Boolean expressions, things that are very low in low complexity and high complexity, is the machine language. Yeah.
Also use up all the letters.
If you use all the letters, you're kind of screwed. I mean, you're not going to be. So that's why there's not seven. The instructions are not 7 bits. They're 32 bits. They're more. So you can use way more variables. You can actually use a ton. I think. So if you have a computer, if your processor is 74 bits, that allows for 74 bits of instructions. So that's, you have a lot of space there. So if you use 4 for the code, okay, say you use 5 for the instruction code, you have, you know, 50, over 55, which is 2 to the 55, which is, I don't know, a big number of variables that you can use. And probably your computer's going to explode before that anyway, so. I mean, your brain is going to explode if you use 2 to 55 variables. So yeah, that's why we use the small 7-bit instructions, but, okay. So this is another table that shows kind of the same thing. We had physical bits on the very low level, and these are some examples. We had zeros and one, and high-low voltage. I'm looking forward to reading your homeworks about what you use to encode bits. This is apparently hilarious, okay. And so you can have, you know, you can have water pressure, you can have kinetic energy, you can have a lot of different things. And on top of that, we build logic gates. We had, you know, we combined bits and we said, you know, we had ands, ors, and nots, which are the building blocks for everything, basically, or any logical expressions. You can use different ones, you know. Then we had logic gates. We made if-then-else-5 that you had in slides. You made an if-then-else 32 for the homework. You can define any gate. We made a NIM, that game where you took different pieces one at a time or two at a time. We can make a gate for that. And then we had the machine language that we just studied, the 7-bit instructions. We can have higher level languages, which can be Python or Scratch or Java or others. And you have software libraries and so on. Okay, and so now that we kind of filled the gaps that we had, we can go further by trying to build more sophisticated things using simpler programs. And so we're going to try to dive into subroutines, and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, there's just a lot of research on how to make things faster, how to make, you know, if you take computer science 110, I think. When they teach you programming, they teach you, you know, how to make your code very clean and very short and efficient. And so we're going to start by looking at songs and lyrics for songs. I think there's a YouTube, which is very embarrassing, but I just have to show it. It's a TV show from the 60s. And, I mean, even I'm too young for that.
All right.
Here's the scratch program that you would do. Okay, maybe I'll skip this. All right, let's go to another wonderful song, Clementine, which is kind of creepy. But so if we wanted to write a scratch program that would, where the little sprite would say, he would say like the lyrics of the song. How would we do that? And so we would just say, okay, this is not, the sprite is not saying necessarily things, but it plays a sound. It plays the first line, it plays the second line, it plays the third line, and so on. And so we can write a scratch program where, say, we have a sound for each, we have a sound for each line, and we can, we can play all these sounds in sequence. But we notice that there's a chorus, and we have these two lines that repeat, right? So, that happens to a lot of songs. And so we can make a subroutine and just write those two lines once and then just broadcast the chorus, right? And so, we're going to play the first two lines, the third and the fourth line, and then we have the chorus, and then the second verse and a chorus and third verse and so on, okay? And so it makes it much easier to fix too, because if the chorus shows up a lot of times, and you made you have a spelling problem in the chorus, you have to go and fix it in every single instance of that chorus, right? So if you forget the T here, you have to go and fix that. Whereas if you have the subroutine, you only have to fix it once, and then it gets fixed everywhere because these guys call the subroutine. Okay, so this is a Beatles song, and if you look at this, what would your subroutines be? What would be the subroutines that you define? Like, is there anything that repeats? Yeah.
The chorus, all my loving, I will send to you.
Okay, that's a good, yeah. And there's also this part. Oh, all right. So this part, which repeats, close your eyes and I'll kiss you until... and I'll send all my loving to you. So this part repeats. And then there's also, this doesn't show very well. All right, so if you choose your, courses or something to be this, you just have to, so you write a subroutine that actually plays these lines, and you just call it twice. And you just say, you first play the blue part, and then you play your other stuff. Then you play the blue part again, and then you play the end of the song. And so you only have to write this part once. But then there's also, you noticed that there's the... so this shows how subroutines can call out subroutines. So there's actually, this part actually shows in the blue part. And so when we write the blue subroutine, the close your eyes, the one that starts with close your eyes, we can call the yellow part too. And so we make a subroutine that plays this thing, and then the blue subroutine calls the yellow subroutine. Okay? Does this make sense? Subroutines? Maybe not. Okay, there's other structure. This is, Beatles have a lot of songs that are pretty cute like that. So this is more complicated a little bit. So there's a blue part, and there's a green, there's a red part, and there's a, so, let's go. So this part, I don't know. It's kind of, I guess you can see it in the slide. I'm not going to worry about it. But you can basically only write this once, and I think that's it. So there's only three things that you need to write. And then you just say, blue, broadcast red, broadcast yellow, broadcast red, green, blue, and so on. So it makes everything very very clean. And this is the Old MacDonald song. This also has a very interesting structure. So you have the moo, the mooing, and then there's a pig, I think, coming in. And so the pig snorts, and then after the pig snorts, the cow moos. And then you have a horse. And whenever the horse neighs, the pig snorts and the cow moos. And then you have the chick, which this got kind of, it's too low. So how do we write the subroutine for this? So we notice that every time we snort, we follow it with moo. So basically, whenever the pig snorts, there's always a moo coming after it, here and here. And whenever we neigh, we follow it with snort, which always follows with moo, but we're not going to say that. Whenever we chuck, gluck, we follow it with neigh, and so on. And so what can we do here? We can say, this is the whole song. So when the flag is clicked, broadcast cow, broadcast pig, broadcast horse, and broadcast chick. And so this is the first verse that only talks about the cow. The second verse talks about the pig and the cow. The third verse talks about the horse, the pig, and the cow. And the fourth verse talks about the chick, the horse, the pig, and the cow. And so we want to write a program for that. And so what is the cow subroutine? Well, we play. So it turns out that I think this is okay. So this is the cow part. So the cow part is the first verse, and we have to play "Old MacDonald Had a Farm" twice, and then we have to do a cow. And so this plays sounds, and then we have to broadcast moo. And mooing says, with a moo moo here and a moo moo there, probably, and so on. And so whenever we do a pig, we also have moo before it. So we play the moo, and then we play the pig, and then we play the moo. And when we receive the horse, we're going to play the horse, and then we're going to play the pig, and the pig also plays the cow. And same with the chick. And so let's see if I can go back to it. Before we go further with subroutines, this is when you go into Scratch. When you on the left hand side, you're gonna see make a variable and make a list, and so. You're going to make a list, and this whole menu shows. And you can add a thing to the list. You can delete something from the list, insert, replace items, and so on. And so I started with adding. And what does adding do? Whenever you make a list, that's going to be empty. And so adding something just adds at the end of the list. So if I run this, this is what's going to show up. My list is going to be 1, 2, 3. So what's item at 1? It's 1, item at 2 is 2, and item at 3 is 3. And it also says this is the length of the list, it's 3. If we delete, we can mention which element we want to delete it. So I said, you know, delete the first element. And so before we delete one from the list, actually, this says delete one means item at one. So the first item in the list. It could be 10, it could be 20, it could be anything. It so happens that this is one, and so it deletes the first element in the list. And it makes, notice how the length changes. So length is 3 here because there's 3 elements in the list, and length is 2 because there's 2 elements. And so a better way to add only adds at the end. We can add at any point in the list. So I made an example, same thing. We use the same list, and I insert 8 as the last element in the list. And so here, if there's a little menu, you can click here, and it scrolls down, and you can choose any number here. But I chose last. And so what this is going to do, it's going to add 8 as the last element in the list. And so length was 2. And we're going to have 2, 3, and 8. Okay, and now I'm inserting 9 at 3. What do you think this is going to do? So this is saying insert 9 as the third element in the list.
9's going to come before 8.
9's going to come before 8. So it's going to be 2, 3, 9, 8. Okay, so it kind of forces 9 into the third as the third element, and it pushes everything back after that. And so now the length is 4 because we insert an element in the list. We can also replace elements. So I'm saying here, I added this instruction, replace item 3 of list with 100. So what is this going to do?
9
becomes 100. Okay, it's kind of like with the accumulator equals something. It just dumps whatever was in here before. It dumps 100 there. Okay? And then, you know, the length of a list is how many elements are. So in this case, if the list is this, the sprite will say 4. As I said, say length of list for 3 seconds. And so that's what the sprite is going to say. Yeah.
Last one
would become
the first section of the list.
So
yeah, that was insert at 1.
Okay. So if you insert, what would happen if I said insert 200 at 1 in the list?
Okay, so that was all at 1. So
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep. So that was a clicker question last time, and yeah.
Okay.
So now, how do we make the sprite go over the list and tell us what all the elements are? So this is, up to this point, is where I created the list. The sprite says the length of the list, and then it sets a counter to 1. We somehow have to go over all the elements. And we're going to use a repeat until loop. And a repeat until loop stays in the loop until this condition is met. So we say repeat until, the counter is length of list plus 1, I think, needs to be here. And then we say the item counter of the list. So counter is going to start at 1. It's going to say item 1. Then it's going to go to 2. It's going to say 3. It's going to go to 3. It's going to say 100. It's going to go to 4. It's going to say 8. And then it's going to stop. And that's it. I think we're going to stop here.
Thank you. assignments.
Yep. And if you have any other questions, just let me know.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I just wanted to say thanks for the help.
You're very welcome. Yeah.
I finally understood.
Okay, that's great. That's great. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Subtraction. All right, let's take another example. I'm going to turn this off. I'm gonna have these.